your finances on a higher power. Being good stewards of the financial resources God has bestowed upon each of us is the key to financial success in life. It's your finances on a higher power. Here's your host, Paula T. Webb.
Hello, fellow traders. This is Paula T. Webb coming to you from 1610 WBGS. It's a great place to be. It is Sunday, April 6th, 2025. So, we're going to take a little bit of a departure here in the first part of the show. I'm going to tie it into trading, but I want to share something with you because I've had an experience yesterday that was just kind of blew my mind. But I want to help all of you traders just understand right here, right now, just how good your life is. So that's going to be the theme of today's show. And it's going to entail me sharing some personal experiences and how I relate that all into being connected to my highest power, which is our God in heaven, and Him directing me to understand that even at our worst moments, our life is still really good. So a couple of years ago, I had a good friend. His name was Joe Carocchio. He was one of the first internet radio show hosts. And we're talking a long time ago now. I think 2007, 2008. It was a local show. It was 11radio.com. And it was a radio show for independent musicians. Now, Joe, throughout his career, was a marketing and advertising guy on the East Coast for city and county services. But he was also a heck of a musician and played in bands his whole entire life. I think he was a bass player, but don't quote me on that. I know he played some kind of guitar, and he also sang. He wasn't the lead singer, but he was the organizer of all the bands. So we met in Scottsdale when Mark and I were over there working some years ago. And Joe was also a great promoter. And he would put together workshops and seminars and stuff like that for local talent or up-and-coming businesses. He also wrote a book, The Law of Distraction and Interruption. And that is going to be republished. It's out of print right now. It's going to be republished later this year with some additional information from me. Anyway, so like I said, a number of years ago, we went out to lunch, and we're just getting caught up on all our projects that were going on, and I had just finished my book, The Complete Daughter, and that is a book that chronicles my adventures once I became caregiver to my mother during the last 10 years of her life. And I won't get into that subject right now. That's for another show. But that book was written at the suggestion of my mother because she wanted others to know about what it means to be a caregiver. So as I'm explaining to Joe, I just got done with the book and it was really a labor of love. He suggested that I consider giving a presentation to a group of single parents, which was hosted by the Phoenix Elks. Now, the Phoenix Elks, you know, I'm sure we've all heard of the Elks and the VFW halls and that kind of thing. And they a lot of these organizations, it's not just a place for older gentlemen to go sit and smoke and have a beer. They actually do some really good work in the community. Joe at the time was marketing them and trying to get more events out to the community. Now, at the time, I wasn't sure, you know, what I would have to say to single parents because I've never been a single parent. But he reminded me that, you know, caregiving is caregiving no matter who you're doing it to or who you're advising or anything like that. And he was right. So I agreed to give a presentation at the next Elks Single Parent Breakfast, which they held the first Saturday of every month. Now, not knowing much about the Elks or this single parent breakfast, I was a little bit intimidated, I'll admit to you guys here. All I knew about the Elks is that they're a very old organization. They do a lot of community work. But I still wasn't sure how my material or any presentation might fit in with the single parent's breakfast, considering, again, I am not a single parent. I never have been. More importantly, I only have stepkids. So as I really had to think about this, and I felt like I had gotten myself into a predicament for a couple days. And it finally occurred to me that even though I wasn't a single parent, I could speak to the group because my mother had become a single parent after my father died. Now, if that wasn't, you know, a divine gift from God helping me get out of that situation with a topic, I don't know what was. So anyway, once I figured out what I was going to talk to the group about, I got to work writing my presentation. And it came really easy after that. I just simply began to write about my experience with my single parent mother that occurred just because my father died at a young age. I detailed how my father died, leaving my mother with little money through no fault of his own. And that's explained in more detail in the book, The Complete Daughter. How my mother had no financial resources to pursue, even though she knew she was being stolen from fraudulently by the company that my father worked for, as well as the insurance company that they had paid into. So 4 pages later, after writing, I felt pretty comfortable that my speech was good and might be quite helpful for those I would be meeting on the day of the single parent breakfast. Now that morning, when I arrived at the Elks and plenty of time to meet the staff hosting the event, I got there in time also to help out a bit, to help them, you know, get all the, get the plates ready, set up the tables for all the families that would be attending the breakfast. And they not only did they feed the parents and their children a complete breakfast, I mean, from, you know, everything but the kitchen sink, they also would leave the Elks with a box of free groceries to help them through the next month. So not only were we setting up the tables and firing up, you know, the griddle for the pancakes and starting to cook the bacon and scramble the eggs and toast and all that kind of stuff, we were also putting together these boxes of food. So as I watched these families arrive, I found myself becoming somewhat emotional. Now, these families ran the gamut of mothers with children, fathers with children, and even more touching was to see grandparents with grandchildren. Now, I don't know the circumstances surrounding any of their situations, but, you know, we can guess. Of course, divorce being one, you know, untimely death, jail maybe, incarceration, drugs, even abandonment. One or all of the above may have played a factor in these families becoming single caregivers. A situation that most of us, most of you listening here today, including myself, will never have to experience. Now, when I said a few moments ago about my mother being a single mother, again, I was speaking about the time after my father passed away. But the difference between the single parent families I had the pleasure of meeting at this Elks breakfast and my experiences after my father died are vastly different. Let me explain. And I trust me, guys, just bear with me. I'm gonna tie all this in. As I watched the families arrive at the Elks breakfast, I had the impression that this was not the usual group of people, obviously, I was used to speaking to. Now, I don't always just speak with traders. As you know, I'm a chaplain with the Sheriff's Department. So there are times when I am giving the opening prayer at a graduation ceremony, or I'm comforting, you know, a deputy that's witnessed, you know, a really traumatic event. So I do speak to all types of people. But at that point, years ago, almost every group I'd spoken to before I became a chaplain with the Sheriff's Department was in the performance of a trading coach, or in my capacity as a minister, you know, doing weddings and baptisms and that kind of things. And mostly everybody was middle class in terms of demographics. Now, I'm not saying that any of the single parents weren't in that same financial category. However, the energy that emanated from them and their children really spoke volumes. Now, due to whatever circumstances that precipitated their being at the Elks breakfast, as I watched the families get seated in the dining area, I felt a sense of embarrassment and sadness from them. And as I sat there and watched the families enjoy the breakfast provided to them, I had to ask myself honestly, was my perception of embarrassment or sadness coming from them or from me? And what started happening was I began to think back at the time when my own mother became single after my father's death. Now, at the time, I never knew how desperate the financial situation had become. I mean, you know, parents don't let their kids know that, or they shouldn't anyway. My mother did whatever she could to maintain our middle-class existence, all the while covering up that we were teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. And again, I never knew this until 14 years later, when my mother became critically ill and I stepped in to care for her. So during her convalescence, she confided in me many things she had kept secret, things that had led up to her major illness due to the stress of being quiet about what she had to do to keep the family solvent. My mother didn't do anything illegal, of course. She simply held minimum wage jobs out of our sight. And how embarrassing that must have been for her. So as I sat there watching these families, thinking about my own financial success, I had to reassess exactly how good my life was. So we're going to take a short break and we're going to continue on with this. So stay with me because you're going to enjoy this ride. We're back. All right, so continuing on with this experience at the Elks, I'm not going to go into all the details of, you know, what transpired with my mother after my father died. So suffice it to say that, you know, I finished high school, went on to college, moved to Chicago, and my mother's life took a turn for the worse in terms of financial opportunities. I mean, at that point, she was in her 50s. This was the early 80s. Most companies weren't hiring women that had gray hair, let's be honest. So, but she still hid that from me. I didn't know. Every time I called her, as we lived in separate states, she was cheerful, you know, still sent me cards. I wrote her, all this kind of stuff. So, and this was before cell phone, guys, okay? So, anyway, so that was her role. She's a parent, of course, and she never let her children know fear. At one point in 1985, she became very ill, and I had to fly down to Virginia, where she was living at the time. And as I looked at this frail woman lying in the hospital bed, ready to give up the ghost, I vowed that I would never let her do that. At the time, I had no idea how I was going to make her well, but I simply knew I would. And of course, Mark Douglas and I were living together at the time. Yes, I know, living in sin. But I called him and he said, here's my American Express card. Get your mother back on her feet and you bring her up here to Chicago. And I fell in love with him all over again. But, you know, what I'm getting at here, guys, is that this is what began my lifelong experience of understanding just what it means to be a caregiver. And in my role as trading coach and trading encourager to you, not influencer, but trading encourager to you, that's what I'm doing. I am giving you care in an area that you need it. So being a caregiver stretches across all demographics. It stretches across all facets of life. But back here years ago at this Elks breakfast for these parents and grandparents that were struggling, I began to wonder just what I could say that might make a difference to them. As I was looking over my presentation again and again while waiting to be called to speak, because there were other speakers there, I realized what I had written was completely wrong. There was no way this group wanted to hear a 4-page presentation. They needed someone to talk to them for real. Someone who had been there in the trenches. And that someone was not me. So I began to think back to all those years prior to when my mother was so ill. And I thought, what did I do or say to make her change her mind to get healthy? What did I do or say when she was laying there in the hospital bed that made her think that her life was still worthwhile and it was still, there was still some goodness? I remember how she said she was so tired and afraid and didn't have any strength left. And in that moment, with my mother, I had simply patted her hand and said, "Don't worry, everything will be okay." Something that she had said to me countless times as a child, right? And when I said that, and I held her hand, and I'll tell you here, guys, I'll never forget the relief in her eyes as she drifted off to a much-needed, worry-free sleep. Now, my mother got healthy, and she was very happy in Chicago with us for another 12 years. And her time was, as I had promised her, one that was worry-free, fun-filled, a time of knowing she wasn't alone, and a time of knowing she was loved greatly. Again, just like many a single parent provides for their children. So as I stood up to give my presentation, I realized that what was most appropriate for this single parents group at the Elks that day was simply a pat on the back. Or shall we say, a pep talk. A reminder that they were and are doing the absolute best they can each and every day for their family, no matter how much or how little they think they have, or how much in reality they may or may not have. I did give a little background about how my mother did her best, even though I never knew how she struggled. And I saw many heads in the group nodding. I reminded the group that I had turned out pretty good. Even though I didn't live in a big house, I think our house was probably 1,000 square feet that I grew up in. I don't know. It was, you know, 3 bedrooms, 1 bath. Okay. That's the way it was back then. I didn't have the nicest clothes growing up. I grew up where it was hand-me-downs from my older sisters. And my mother, you know, was a great seamstress, and so she would alter everything. And this was all because my mother made it, quote, all right, all of the time. And I reminded the group that that's exactly what they are doing all the time. They are doing all right. So I had them turn to each other and say out loud, "You are doing a great job. Thank you." At first, there was a little hesitance, and I repeated the command, and then they did. I had them turn to each other, total strangers with each other, and shake hands, or give a high five, or even a hug, and they did. I told them that I knew they were doing the best they could do in any given moment, and that was a good thing. I reminded them that their children and grandchildren knew they were doing the best they could, and to remember that through the tough times. and to give themselves a pat on the back once a week to keep that positive thought strong. And I think maybe all these years ago, just maybe hearing that they were doing a good job, maybe that might have been just what they needed, or quite possibly what they wanted to hear. A simple pat on the back, a reassurance that throughout it all, they're going to be okay. And isn't that each one of you traders would like to hear yourself? Of course it is. And that's where I step in. And that's when I really started embracing my role as a trading coach. Not necessarily a mentor, because there's a lot of confusion, because mentors are supposed to be free. I do not work for free, guys. Sorry. You know, I do like getting paid for my job, which I love to do. But I'm bringing this up because there are times when maybe we're faced with uncertainty as to whether to put on a trade or not. Sometimes you just got to jump in if you followed all your rules. And if you haven't followed your rules, then that uncertainty is telling you not to trade. So I want to remind all of you listening here today and every day that you're doing your best. You truly are. And a phrase that Mark always used to like to say was, if you could do better, you would. And that ties into, you don't know what you don't know. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, we may, you know, not trade well because we don't follow our rules and have trading errors, or we have a drawdown, and then the next minute we'll say, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Okay, so what? It's done. It's over. If you learn from that, then it won't happen again, or at least it'll happen less frequently. So you've learned from it. So it's not a trading error. Everyone does the best they can in any given moment. I truly believe that. We may not like what they're doing. We may not like what they're saying in that moment. But the bottom line is, that is who they are in that moment. That is their truth. Just like, even if you make a trading error, even if you don't follow your rules, in that moment, you are living your truth as a trader. The next moment, you may live a different truth, a better truth. You may follow your rules more. But in that moment, that's your truth, and that's okay. Just learn from it and move forward from it. So feel good about yourself, okay? And give your loved ones a hug, whether human or furry or feathered or scaled or whatever, two-legged, four-legged, whatever, and know that you are appreciated and loved in many more ways than you may ever know. But the first thing to remember is, love yourself. Because you are doing the best you can. Just like all those single parents at that breakfast at the Elks so many years ago. They were doing the best they could. And they all came together and they told each other that. So that's what I'm doing with you guys here today. I'm telling you, you're doing the best you can in any given moment, and you will do better in every subsequent moment. We'll be right back.
Paula T. Webb will be back with us in a moment. It's Your Finances on a Higher Power.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that little bit of analogy that I shared with you, because it really applies a lot more today with everything that's going on in this great country, that people seem to focus on the negative. And I try not to, and that's why, as I've said countless times, that, you know, Mark Douglas and I stopped watching the news decades ago. I mean, yes, I watch the news. I know what's going on. I don't live in a vacuum, okay? But, you know, I'm not going to sit there for hours and listen to other people try to influence what I know to be true for me. And that's something that traders especially have to keep in mind, that you've got all these people on the internet attempting to influence how you trade and what you trade. Complete strangers. And you may be even subscribing to them, paying them money for them to tell you what to do. Trading isn't a business where someone else can tell you what to do, unless you're strictly a mechanical trader, where someone says, all right, here's your setups, here's your stops, go do it. All right. That's the only way that traders can be told what to do. Because you got into trading to think for yourself, to be your own boss. And what's amazing is none of you seem to realize that you've only substituted a different boss by subscribing to all these other people who make great claims about taking a lot of money out of the markets, and it's just a different boss. So you still are not even thinking for yourselves. So you have to understand this, guys. So I don't remember who wrote this. I'll look it up. I'll tell you next week. But this is a little poem. I think it's New Thought. I think it's from the New Thought or the Unity Book of Poems. And it says, you are never higher than your lowest thought. You are never lower than the peak of your desire. And all existence has no wonder wrought to which ambition you may not yet aspire. There is no planet, sun, or star that could hold you back if you but knew who you are. Isn't that beautiful? So, I mean, the point is if you don't know who you are because you've just traded one boss for another boss, meaning the people you subscribe to on the internet, then how are you going to realize your trading dreams? Seriously. If you're still listening to someone else tell you what to do, then that's a boss. Okay. And I'm not talking about taking training. I'm not talking about learning a methodology. I'm talking about once you know how to read a chart, you've got your system, you got your edge. Okay. That's the nuts and bolts. Anybody can do that, as we went over in the previous show. So now it's up to you to become you as a trader, not hang out or wait for someone to tell you what to do, because they're not paying you. They're not telling you how to trade to give you a paycheck, right? No, they're not. So I don't understand, after you take your training and you know how to read a chart and you've got your edge and you've got your system and you know how to use it, why would you listen to anybody else tell you how to trade? Now, I know a lot of you are going to come back and say, well, you know, they have more experience and, you know, I'm new to this or newer, or I'm changing markets and I just wanted more information. That's not the way it works, guys. You want to be a trader, be a trader. Stop listening to other people and then calling me after you've blown up your account and your wife's ready to divorce you or you mortgaged your house for the third time because you listen to other people. I don't even get it. I mean, I've mentioned to you folks previously, when I worked on the trading floor, I started out as a runner where I literally took the orders and gave them to the broker in the trading pit, and I became a phone clerk. And that whole entire time, I learned how to, well, it was back before we had computers, so we had to make our charts by hand. I learned how to write a chart. I learned how to read a chart. I had the luxury of working with some of the best traders, floor traders, and some of the worst, and they all had a trading plan. And most of their trading plans were written on, you know, yellow legal pads. That's the way it was back then, okay? So we're talking, you know, late 80s. So the point being is that I tried out their systems, just like, you know, all of you out there. You try out a system, you see if you like it. If you don't like it, it doesn't work for you, it doesn't resonate with you, it may just not be the right system for you. It doesn't mean you're stupid. It doesn't mean that you have to keep hammering, you know, hammering yourself, thinking, well, I paid for it. You know, maybe I'm missing something. And then you subscribe to, you know, one or two or more people on the internet thinking that they're going to have the answers. Okay, sometimes you buy a system and it just doesn't click with you. Okay, I think when I was going through systems back then, I probably tried 11 different trading systems. 11. I think it was 10 or 11. Some of them were very difficult, as I've said previously. I couldn't even get halfway through the first page. They were so convoluted. But, you know, and eventually, you know, I found very simple systems. There's like two or three of them that I really felt I connected with. There wasn't anybody back then telling me how to trade. You know what the traders did? They handed me the graph paper. They said, here's a pen. Start making a one tick chart, a five tick chart, a 15 tick chart. Watch the ticker tape. That's how I got started. Nobody told me how to trade. So that's not the way it works. You have to make a quantitative decision every single day before you get into the market as to what kind of winner you're going to be. And if you don't make that decision, then you can't be a winner. If you haven't made a decision to be a winner, how do you think you're going to be a winner? Now think about this, folks. I mean, for heaven's sakes. Now, I understand, you know, nowadays, you know, it's not like when I first started trading, but, you know, and I understand that you can get information instantaneously nowadays and 24/7. You know, we didn't have that luxury back in the 80s and the 90s. And that really didn't start happening until the mid 2000s. So, you know, I didn't grow into being a trader having other people tell me what to do. Wouldn't even occur to me to ask anybody to tell me what to do. Wouldn't even occur to me. Because that's not the way it works, guys. Now, do you think any of those guys you see on MSNBC or CNN, the guys with the jackets that are, you know, traders? They are traders, guys. They're not just commentators. They're actually trading. The big houses, for the big, you know, on the big boards. You think they're asking each other, hey, what are you doing? Well, how should I do this? Should I get in this trade? No, because they're competing with each other. Now, you're going to subscribe to somebody on the internet that you don't even know, and you know this is a real, you know, sore subject with me, then you get what you deserve. You don't want to think like a winner. You don't want to start learning how to think as a trader. Then your success is going to match that mindset. Your equity is going to equate to the lack of trust you have in yourself. And that's what this all boils down to. Nobody knows what they're doing when they first start trading, guys. Okay? It's just, but you have to learn. You have to learn. Now, unless you're going to be strictly a mechanical trader and just, you know, put on your trades, put in your stops and, you know, let it go and, you know, turn off the computer, that's fine because that's the way I trade, as I've explained earlier. But if you want to sit at your computer every single day and watch the markets and have somebody force feed you, because you're paying them X amount of dollars a month, you know, to give you a trading advice, when is it that you're going to step up to the plate and start making your own decisions? When are you going to take responsibility for growing your money? Someone who is constantly listening to other people tell them how to trade is never going to have dominion over their wealth because they won't have any wealth to manage. You may make a living, you may be comfortable as a trader, but you will never take that type of money out of the markets that you dream of because you don't trust yourself. If you trusted yourself, you wouldn't need to listen to anybody. Nobody, including me. And that's where your fear steps in. You're afraid to listen to yourself. You're afraid to believe in your higher power. You have disconnected from your very DNA that is part of God. We are all children of God. Everything that lives on this planet was created by God. Everything. And probably the planets out in the universe were created by him. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm assuming they were. But, you know, I don't have that infinite mindset that our Heavenly Father does. So he may have just created Earth. I don't know. But I'm going to think a little more globally and think he created everything, the whole universe. So, but my point being is that, as I said in the previous shows, Adam and Eve lived in the Garden of Eden. God created them to live together. That is your DNA just as well. He gave them everything to be as prosperous as they want to be. And that still within each one of you traders today, you have to start believing this. And the more you rely on other people, the less you rely on God. And God is the source of all wealth, whether it's financial, physical, spiritual, emotional, mental. So start tapping into God. Give him the same amount of attention you give to these anonymous idiots on the internet. I'm sorry, I'm calling them idiots, because if they were so good, you'd be making a boatload of money just like them. Okay, so, you know, we're getting a little deep here today, but, you know, this is where we're moving forward, folks. This is what Mark and I began so many years ago, and I'm just tapping into all the material that we wrote that didn't go into our first couple books and getting it out there to all of you. Hopefully, you know, you guys will enjoy it. Now, you know, one of the other areas in what we were kind of talking about today is it might be easy to give yourself a pat on the back, but it can be challenging if your partner or significant other is not too keen on you being a trader. And I want to mention again that we provide life coaching here for couples, whether they're both trading or one's trading and the other one isn't. And one of the most successful things that we instituted, and we started this, I want to say it's got to be probably around 2002. We had a good friend, this was in Chicago, we had a good friend who was married, very successful man, his wife was very successful, both PhD types, and his wife was also an accomplished vocalist, appearing in a lot of local concerts, you know, they had a lot of assets, and the husband, Dan, decided to become a trader. So that's when he initially contacted us, and we ended up, the four of us, you know, both families, becoming friends for a number of years. Well, Dan kind of had a roving eye. And I think he had a roving eye the whole time he was married. I don't know, but I do know at least after we met him, he did. And he hid it from his wife. I think he thought he did, but he didn't hide it from his friends. And there were times when we would meet for dinner and one of his little chicky poos would be on his arm instead of his wife. So made things a little awkward when we would go over to his house, you know, and hang out with his wife and kids. Anyway, so there came a point where their youngest son had turned 18 and they decided to separate. So Dan came to us and he said, you know, his wife had found out about, he actually had three girlfriends on the side and she wasn't too happy about it. So what we suggested was, knowing both of them, we said, well, first of all, we're not going to talk to you alone. If we're going to do any kind of coaching here, we're going to do it with you together because we know both of you. So I called up his wife and I said, Linda, do you want to come over? And she's like, sure. So anyway, what we ended up creating was a pre-separation agreement, contract. And what they did with initially without attorneys, they sat in our office and we had a number of sessions and they went over all their assets. And because they weren't fighting about it, they actually amicably were able to split everything, you know, equitably. And so, and I think it was because we provided a safe space. And of course, I lied and I said I didn't know about the other girlfriends. Okay, so, but the point being is that once they did that, then they took their contract to their attorneys. They had separate attorneys, which we suggested, you know, had them notarized, and the attorneys went through, and they ended up getting divorced, you know, with no problems. And so even though their kids were adults, you know, the kids didn't have to hear anything negative or, you know, what normally happens in a lot of divorces. So word got around in the trading community, and we had more and more couples approach us and say, you know, we really would like you just to coach us in our relationship, not always, you know, because they were getting separated. And so we were doing that. And I kind of touched on this briefly previously, but we didn't advertise it because that wasn't our primary focus. Obviously, our primary focus is to help traders become the best traders they can be. However, if you have a significant other or a spouse or a family member or family that is, you know, nagging in your ear about you being a trader or not making enough money or any money, then that's going to interfere with your ability to be objective and see opportunities in the market. So this is where, and I hate to use the word life coaching, but it is. I mean, I call it living with a trader 101. So if you guys are having any challenges in that area, you know, please know that this is something that can be readily available and easy to, you know, easy to fix a lot of times. So, you know, one of the things just to get started before we end the show here today is you have to talk to your partner or your significant other and ask them what their definition of a trader is. What is their definition of success as a trader? What do they think it takes to be a successful trader? Just simple questions. But see, you can't ask them those questions if you don't know the answers to that yourself. What is your definition of success as a trader? What do you think it takes to be a successful trader? Do you think that you and your partner or wife or family even have the same definitions of success? Now, you may have when you first got together, but that may have changed. Okay, so before we end the show, I just want to remind you, you know, just honor each other, okay? Both of your feelings are legitimate, and it is appropriate to set personal boundaries, because you as the trader know better than anyone else what you need to be successful. You know, I just want to remind you guys, too, that, you know, God is there for you no matter what. And I'm going to read you a quick poem here. Be strong and valiant for the truth and trust in God each day and hour. Be strong and firmly trust and with his grace and strength be blessed. For God is always strong and true and helps to keep us from the wrong. He is our rock, our tower, a shield he is to them that trust, and joy to those who seek his faith. He will never forsake you. This is what he says. He stays ever in your hearts and makes you peaceful in pastures that are green, and walk along paths of pleasantness, he will always guide you. That's a poem from Jenny McNicholas from 1900. And that was given to the soldiers before they left for World War I. So we'll continue on with this in a future show. In the meantime, this is Paula T. signing off. You can reach me at 760-636-4290 or paulatweb.com and have a wonderful trading week.
Paula T. Webb, co-author of The Disciplined Trader, The Complete Trader, and several other all-time best-selling, award-winning books, including Trading in the Zone, books that set the bar on trading psychology. You can find her classic books on Amazon and on her website, www.paulatweb.com.